Okay. Melachim, Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Dalet. We saw three loaded psukim last week. Let's recap in brief, very briefly. David is accused, sorry, Shlomo is accused of taking many foreign wives and loving them. This includes three accusations, as we saw the Mefarshim break it down. He took foreign wives, that was number one. He took many of them, that was number two. And he loved them, that was number three. Okay? And as we discussed, if we're going to get to the finer, subtler level of these accusations, in brief, what we discussed last week, Shlomo here, as we've been discussing time and time again, was on a campaign. These were women he was trying to make shiduchim to spread his influence, to be as world-embracing as possible. He took women from daughters of kings from all around the world, populated world. Presumably it wasn't only kings, I don't know. But whatever it is, it was well calculated. There was a campaign here to spread his influence. Okay. But A, he took foreign wives, which is already a problem, because that is allowing in foreign influence. That's number one. Yes, he had very, very great plans. But to go, you want to spread knowledge of Hashem further, the number one priority is that the spiritual welfare of the Jewish people is absolute. Their sterility, the pristine purity of the Jewish people has to be absolute. Now he assumed that he would be able to hold on to that, to be able to do both. Which is why, actually, his campaign was a meritorious one. But A, he took foreign wives. B, he took many of them. By taking many of them, the Torah already says, the king has to be non-influenceable. And by taking many of them, he upped the stakes, like the Torah says. He shall not take many wives. I'm talking about from the outside, from the inside. Pious women, don't take many wives so that his heart won't go astray. Once again, Shlomo, relying on his supreme intellect, did take the step. He said, "Ani arbe v'lo asur. I am capable of taking the many wives, compounded by the fact that these are foreign women, and I will not go astray." That was number two.
Did Shlomo consider himself possibly the Mashiach?
I don't know if he considered himself the Mashiach, but he definitely related to his era as something that we might call a messianic era. I mean, he was trying to do us, yes, the tikkun olam, the ultimate, bringing the world to its ultimate perfection, which we generally associate with Mashiach times. So I don't know if we'd say Mashiach per se or not. I'm not sure, but that was definitely the spirit. There was he was relating to his times as messianic times, and he was trying to achieve where the world is supposed to get to at that point.
Is there a saying that Mashiach will take many wives?
Not take many wives, but he will bring the influence. This was Shlomo's way of doing it. But he will bring
to the Mashiach to come.
He will bring Hashem's, the word of Hashem, to the world over. Will he do it by taking many wives? Presumably not. Presumably he'll do it without that.
Were they converted these women?
Presumably they were. Meaning, the halacha is that they were. It's a funny thing to say. But that's how it is. The Rambam says that they were. It's actually machloikis in Chazal. Seems to be machloikis in Chazal. But the assumption is that yes, they were. That's how Rambam assumes. They were converted. But nevertheless,
they were what?
Converted. So that's accusation number two. Accusation number three is the fact that, as we said, he loved them. And this, we spent time on last week. Shlomo, by taking this step, stepped into the realm of what we call Avera Lishma. He was stepping into forbidden territory. Whether literally because he following the opinion that he actually did by step halacha here, Or even according to the opinion that he didn't, it will be a subtler realm, but he was stepping into territories that ideally you do not step into. He was doing it, again, with that famous concept of Aver Lishma, when a person, and it takes a very great person, it was only a handful of people in history who stepped into that realm. These were of the greatest things that we have, and of them, most were unsuccessful. Very, very important to stress that whenever we talk about this subject. But he was one of the handful of people who stepped into the realm of Avera Lishma, of doing an Avera because of a much greater, bigger purpose he had in mind. And here, as we said, once you're stepping into that realm, whereas in other areas of Torah, it's okay if you enjoy yourself when you're doing a mitzvah, when it comes to an Avera Lishma, it is only legitimate if your intents are 100%. There's absolutely nothing personal involved, and it's only Lishem Shamayim. And therefore, the one person who we can name as having succeeded is Yael. Yael, when she seduced Sisera. She was famously the one who made it through. Some of the others who didn't were Shimshon, just for one example. Shlomo, those are the two most famous ones.
That
ordered everybody,
something
going on,
something
going on, maybe a famine, everyone to eat on Yom Kippur. How could you guarantee that everyone who's eating on that? That's not a Aver Lishma. That's halacha. That's halacha. Because the person who has to eat on Yom Kippur does not have to make sure that he doesn't enjoy it. It might be an appropriate thing to do, but that's not halacha. No. And overriding any avera for pikuach nefesh is not avera lishma. That's halach. Avera lishma means stepping outside the bounds of halach, which is something that can only be done like in a very historic kind of cheshbon. Can't be done just because, you know, in this situation it just feels like the right thing to do. It's something like a once in history or a couple of times in history kind of step that you take. Well, Yael saving Klal Yisrael by killing Sisera, right? Shimshon consorting with the Plishti women in order to battle the Plishtim single-handed. And Shlaima, right? Doing what he did in order to spread the word of Hashem worldwide. Okay. So, therefore, he's faulted also with the fact that some personal pleasure got mixed in there. Moshe David Bali says that this was so confusing because Shlaima was a man of love. Shlomo was a man of love, and he approached this campaign with very great enthusiasm. And on top of that, when you marry a woman, at the end of the day, Aver Lishma, not Aver Lishma, converted her and married her, he had an obligation to relate to her with love. Nevertheless, all that was supposed to be happening with completely pure motives. He put himself into a very, very complicated position. And he had a hard time discerning, Rabbi Moshe David Bali says, between his altruistic enthusiasm and his personal love. What's that? Oh, we're not necessarily saying that he was intensely in love with all 1,000 of them. It's enough that he loved a few of them for this accusation to be leveled against him.
It made him that he enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay. So really what it's really boiling down to is two faults. One, this subtle fact that when he was engaged in this there was some element of personal pleasure. And number two is the fact that ultimately, as great an intellectual as he was, the call, his judgment did not play out right. Because, as we're seeing here, in his old age, it did go bad. He was not able to keep as on top of it as he committed to when he figuratively committed to but starting a campaign. Just one second. And this is what he's faulted with. And I'll just end with what we ended with last week. That Chazal actually say, imply that this was done for the purpose of, it's almost as though Shlema had no chance of succeeding because Hashem wanted to make a lesson out of don't be brave when the Torah says to be afraid. If the Torah says, do not take many women lest they turn your heart astray. If the Torah is warning you, heed the warning. Don't be brave. where the Torah calls for apprehension.
Clear about the love point. I wonder if he said something once that he was a Zera, who when he had relations with him, the shame was propelling him, pushing him to do it.
Okay.
And the Rebbe is saying, well, the problem with Shlomo, he loved him, but if he didn't, then he wouldn't have been fulfilled. Here's the obligation.
Okay, this is where it's getting very, very fine. He had to be able to relate to them with love while actually not personally enjoying it. He'd have to bestow upon them the love without actually enjoying, without being at all a receiving part of the, in any way on the receiving end. Impossible? Other
obligation. Which I think was implying would be impossible, is not implied by me.
Okay, I can't, it's hard for me to relate to the specifics now. So I have to hear exactly what was said and what the context was, but this is the idea here.
Putting aside the argument of
no, no, they did. It's continued means at that point. They resumed. That when he first converted them, in his youth, when he married them, there was absolutely no idolatry going on. Things, the cracks started setting in as he grew older and feebler. Okay. So, what's coming out is something kind of ironic. That Shlomo, this is the Yisrael Alter of Kelm said, Hashem will use your successes and your failures for His purposes. Meaning, ultimately, you will be bringing about Kvod Shamayim. The question is, are you going to be the fortunate person who voluntarily joins forces with Hashem, and you are a partner in Kvod Shamayim, or will Hashem do it on your places? The classic example being Paray. Paray defied Hashem, he turned into one of the greatest vehicles of Kvod Shamayim in history, right? But don't be the loser who Hashem is going to play on your back, right? So, look at the contrast between Shlomo and David. This is, of course, in a much more chas v'shalom to compare Paray. But in a much subtler level, in a much subtler level, Shlomo approaches this campaign, fails on his level, but on the contrary, he ends up going down as the lesson of how careful you have to be not to be cavalier about, you know, going between the drops when it comes to the word of Hashem. He ended up being the lesson for all of history. Whereas with David's failures, by relating to them right, David turned them into shining examples of personal successes for all the rest of history. David's big failure, Bathsheba, right? What ends up is that failure turned into an intense tshuva campaign that served all the rest of Klal Yisrael as the ultimate, the epitome of what tshuva should look like, such that retroactively, David actually turned the whole story into a success.
Did Hashem want that failure to happen?
I'm not going to get into that now. That's a complex discussion. I'm not going to get into that. Okay. So now we move on. This basically brings us to where we stopped last week. So we begin Pasuk Dal. Okay, by Hila Ezikna Shlomo was in Shlomo's old age. Nasham Hitu Es Levavai. His wives swayed his heart. Achare Elohim Achir. After foreign gods. And he was not as wholeheartedly dedicated to Hashem as his father David was, which, as we discussed last week, the Navi is already implying that no, this does not mean literally that he served idols, because then the accusation would not be, hey, you're not a David HaMelech. Rather, we're contrasting it with David, whereas David in his old age was able to energetically take action when necessary. Shlomo did not find it within him to be able to take the necessary action to go beyond his natural abilities at his old age to keep those wives under control. That exactly would be the thing. If he was younger and more energetic, he would have known. And the fact that when he grew older, he let up a little bit in terms of his vigilance is exactly the accusation. Whether he knew and couldn't stop it, or whether he didn't know because he wasn't being on top of it enough, it's two sides of the same coin. In fact, Rabbi Rinel says, what would David have done if he was in this situation? What would David have done?
Killed his wife.
That's right. That's what Rabbi Rinel says. Not two ways about it. Straight to the point. Would have killed them all.
Okay. Straight on to the point.
Straight on to the point. Okay. Yeah. In fact, he takes it a step further. He says, this would render their conversions null retroactively. He would have killed them and their children. Okay. Anybody has questions? I have the same questions.
If it should be opposite. If it takes away the conversion, they're
not allowed to survive. What's that? Not allowed to survive, and certainly not Eretz Yisrael, certainly not. Let's set that aside. It's not so important right now. Non-Jews are not allowed to survive. It's one of the show and misses for the Noah. Bear that in mind. Okay. Fine. And this really is the famous concept of Shlem is accused of idolatry because, yes, a person bears the responsibility of things that are in his hands that he could be expected to be on top of.
Is it possible that just like Shlomo Melch's Avodah Zarah is watered down by Chazal, and maybe his wife's Avodah Zarah wasn't quite what we think it was?
You're making a very interesting suggestion.
Like maybe like they didn't actually formally do Avodah Zarah, but
David is making a very interesting suggestion. And actually, Rabbi Manel himself says something along these lines. David is suggesting, could it be that actually also with the wives it wasn't exactly Avodah Zarah? So Rabbi Manel says, he suggests that actually it wasn't. He wants to kill two birds with one stone. He wants to bring it a little closer to that Shlomo was actually involved. The way Chazal are putting it is, they served idolatry. He was not involved, but he's blamed for what they did. And in other words, that by saying he served. Rabbi Rinal wants to say, he wants to kind of bring both closer together. He was involved, and they didn't exactly worship. Okay, he wants to move. And you have Chazal saying, he was here, they were there. He wants to move them both a little closer. He was involved, and they weren't exactly worshiping. What was happening? He says something very interesting. Rabbi Rinal. Rabbi Rinal says, each nation has their own God. Let's continue the next passage. He went after Ashteris, the God of Sidon. After Milkain, the abomination of Moloch. He did what was wrong in the eyes of Hashem. He was not dedicated to Hashem the way David was. Then he built an altar to Kmosh, the abomination of Moab, Bahara Shal Pnei Yerushalayim, on the mountain facing Yerushalayim. That's how it says. And also to Moilech, the abomination of Bnei Amon. B'chein also the Kol Noshav HaNochriyot. He did the same for all of his foreign wives. Maktirois u'mezabkois le'lehem. They were offering up incense and slaughter and bringing offering sacrifices to their gods. Look, by the way, here also, you see the psukim themselves, that the problem was the wives, not him. Right? How does it conclude? He did this god and that for all the women. They were all busy offering things to their gods. Right? That's how the Navi ties up the accusation. Not just between the lines, but pay attention to the lines themselves. Whatever it is, Abba Benel makes a very interesting suggestion. He says, nobody was worshipping idols. Nobody was worshipping idols. What was going on here? He says, each nation has its God. What does that really mean? What does that really mean? On the deeper level, we know that there's a concept of each nation having a Sar. Each nation has an angel, Malach, that's its minister. That's its minister. Okay. Now, Avodah Zarah was, if we're talking on the most authentic level, so to speak, It was finding a way, in general, it was Avodah Zarah, on the original, deeper level. It was finding the ways of harnessing different kaiches of spiritual forces to connect yourself to it. Right? There's a star that brings parnasa. I'm talking very broad strokes now. There's a star of parnasa. There really are such things. Hashem operates in that way. Right? Hashem wants to give a person parnasa. He does it with a pen. Right? Colors in this person's parnasa. That pen is a koichov. It's a star. It's a constellation. Right? The mistake of the idolaters is they started relating to these things as independent powers. And they started finding means of actually connecting to them and harnessing their properties, the properties of these different stars, in order to bring them upon themselves. In very broad strokes, that's where Avodah Zarah comes from. Okay? So now, each nation has its star, has its ministering angel. And Avodah Zarah were the ways of worship, of actually worshipping this star, in order to maximize your connection with it, in order to maximize the connection with Olam Hazeh, in order to, as much as possible, bring down what this star has to offer. And the ways of serving different idols had depth. You have to realize that. It had depth. These were people who knew spiritual laws of nature. When I say spiritual, I don't mean spiritual. I mean forces of Tuma. Okay. But these are spiritual laws of nature that people knew how to harness. It was a big field. And they were not stupid and superstitious. There was a lot of reality to this. Now, 1 minute. And each nation had its individual tsar, which ultimately ended up becoming these different idols, that each one had its national idol. But these were ultimately representations of the tsar. This isn't legitimate. To turn it into something you actually worship is illegitimate. You're not allowed to do that. But this is what Avodah Zarah was. Okay? So now, Abba Benel says, what Shlema actually did was, these women were, as he was getting older, they started missing the old, whatever you want to call it. He said, I'm going to show you how to make these connections without a reason. Without something that actually, Shlomo, with his intense wisdom, he was just as proficient with all these kaychas than any of the idolaters, any of the greatest professors of the idolaters. The Shlomo HaMelech said, I'm going to show you how to connect with these places in ways that do not constitute Avodah Zarah. What exactly would that mean? I don't know. But ways that circumvent the problematic elements that turn it into worship. And the Abba Benel says that's what he did. That's what he did. This is Mamish along the lines that you were suggesting. It's a Chiddush.
That's what he did, and they took it more.
Not necessarily. No. About the Nelson, not necessarily. What's that? The Makhtiroids. That also, it could mean that at the end of the day, that's how the Pasuk is putting it. So I don't know. It's a Chiddush.
So worship is a major part of getting this to work?
Yeah.
So you're saying that Avodah Zarah works?
What's that?
So you're saying that Avodah Zarah works?
I am. You know what? That is what comes out of the Kadmonim. That if a person knows how to harness the Koichas HaTuma right, he can actually cause effects. Kuzari talks about it. It's a big Chiddush. But that's what comes out of the Kadmai. I don't want to get into it. This is a conversation that we can't get into our regular lives.
You can't drive on Shabbos from one place to another. You got there. No, it's not legit.
Oh, it says that at the end of the day, it's finding a way of getting around the problem of Avodah Zarah, but it remains conceptual Avodah Zarah. Meaning, even if halachically in Bezim, it's not going to be ruled on as Avodah Zarah, the problem with Avodah Zarah is putting the weight on the means instead of on the medium instead of going straight to the source. Right? And this at the end of the day was going on. Right?
Bottom line, he was using Kachatuma.
What's that?
Bottom line, Shlomo was using Kachatuma.
Oh, so I wonder. See, I don't know enough exactly how these things work, but I wonder if Papa Beno means to say that no, he actually found ways that even circumvent the Tumah Shebai. I don't know. This is already up for speculation. I don't know. The shameless of Tumah. That they can be done in a mutter way.
The way the Rambam is originally described, it's just the operation of the, how things come down. I think you were about the Zorin in
that. By worshipping, you will harness these kaychas in a stronger way. Now, Shlomo is showing them how to do it in a way without technically worshipping.
But if they're just messengers, then how could the Shliach be influenced?
What's that?
If they're just...
Because that's the way Hashem set it up. That's the way Hashem set it up. What's that? That's right. Hashem set up that yes, you could influence. Just like everything else, like the Yudhya said. Car is a Bria of Hashem. You can use it to be Mechal Shabbos and it'll work. Right? It'll get you to the place you want to go. Okay. Now, Vayis'anaf Hashem b'Shloima. And Hashem, who are angry at Shloima, Ki nata levavoy meim Hashem erekei Yisrael, because his heart. By the way, there's just one comment I'll make. I don't want to leave this open-ended that says Avodah Zarah work or does not work. I'll just say one thing. Avodah Zarah was always intertwined with Kishon. So I'm just going to move it into that realm. I'm not going to get into the whole discussion. Avodah Zarah was always intertwined with Kishon. So, just call it that. Leave it at that. Okay. So now... Hashem grew angry at Shlomo, ki nata levavoy meim Hashem elokei Yisrael, because his heart strayed from Hashem elokei Yisrael, hanireh elav pa'amayim, who had revealed himself to Shlomo twice. Tzibah elav, al hadavar hazeh, and he specifically warned or admonished him about this thing. Levilti leches acharei elohim acher, not to be led astray by other gods. The Leishoma is Hashem Tziva Hashem. And he did not keep what Hashem had commanded. Meaning, Shlomo did not worship idols. But, the fact that Hashem, we, never had Nebuah. All of us have the Nebuah of Avodah Zarah instilled in us strongly enough. Because of everything we're exposed to in the Torah. A person who actually had a personal Nebuah by Hashem, we have to remember, Nebuah was a life-changing experience. Right? Nebuah was something that is indescribable in terms of the experience that it was. A person who had a Nebuah from Hashem commanding him to steer clear of Avodah Zarah, as much as we consider it a taboo, that is to be multiplied many, many fold. And therefore, so you didn't claim, you did not serve Avodah Zarah. Neither did anybody sitting here. But you should have had such an aversion that there should have been no way it could possibly have happened in your home. And therefore, the fact that it did, as far as I'm concerned, after the way I told you about it, after the way you were exposed to my admonitions, that's called going after it. That's called going after the Avodah Zarah. So now, Moshe David Bali says something very interesting. We know that the Malchus Beis David parallels the Levana, the moon. There's a lot to that. A lot of esoteric things to say about that. But we know that Malchus David parallels the moon. Because the Malchus parallels the moon. The moon waxes and wanes. Right? When is the moon at its peak? The 14th of the month. The 15th is the day that already starts waning. Okay? So, Moshe David Vali says, David, what's the gematria of David? 14. This is, David is the kingship of Beis David at its full glory. And its fullest. Right? Shlaima. The gematria and the mispar kata. Mispar kata means, Shin is what? 300, so you just do 3, right? Lamed, 3. Man, 4. And hey, is 5, 15. It already marks where David was 14. Reaching the peak, biggest point it's going to be, Shleima, le'ezik nasa, it's the 15th, toward the end of the day. The 15th is the middle day of the month. It's toward the end of the day that it starts to wane. It was in Shleima's older years, toward the end of Shleima's life, that the moon, the brilliant moon, this is a brilliant sun, in this case, the brilliant moon of Malchus Beis David began waning. Okay. So now, still pretty full. Still pretty full. That's right. At the end of the day, right? When we daven, who's to be involved? Can every mishaber ask what we say? David Ushleima, right? Okay. Vayema Hashem Ushleima. That's right. A woman can either be a very, very great catalyst for her husband's growth, or she can be the cause of his downfall. That's right. Now, Vayema Hashem Lishleima. And Hashem said to Shleima, now make no mistake, this was already known Nevuah. Like Nevuah reflects being at a very, very high madrig. This time, if I should say, it was true enough. Ya'ana shehoisa zois ima. Since you had this with you, this fault was found with you. Ve'loshamarta brisi v'chukoisai, you did not keep my covenant and my statutes, asha tzivisi olecha, that I commanded you. I am going to tear the kingship away from you, the kingdom away from you. I'm going to give it to your servant. Mida keneged mida, the Malbim says. Mida keneged mida. Shleima was allowing there to be a split loyalty within Eretz Yisrael, right? There was already loyalty to someone else other than Hashem existing in Eretz Yisrael. Hashem said, okay, that's going to manifest on the material level as well. The loyalty in Eretz Yisrael is going to split. I'm not going to do it in your day. For the sake of your father David. He fathered you. Knew you. You paid him for this to happen to his own son. But mi'adimcha ekran, I'm going to tear it away from your son. I want to keep things moving now. So let's a quick. Rab eskolam amlocha lo yekra. I'm not going to tear away the whole kingdom. Shevet echad etein livnecha. I'm going to grant your son one shevet. Really, I had Yehuda and Binyamin, right? He's saying that Binyamin shared their territory. It's called one shevet in a sense. The man David, Avdi, I'm going to do that for the sake of David, which really means more than just practicality. It means that ultimately David's kingship is meant to be eternal. Well, the man Yerushalayim Hashem Bachorti, and for the sake of Yerushalayim that I chose, meaning I'm going to keep Malchus Beis David in place. I am going to tear the kingship away from Malchus Beis David, but not entirely. Tear as in literal, holding on to something. Someone comes along and gives a tug, and it tears. You're left with a little bit in your hand. He has some in his hand. That's how Hashem is going to tear the kingship away. But I am going to leave some in your hand for the sake of David, and also for the sake of Yerushalayim. This is very interesting. Hashem's saying, for the sake of Yerushalayim, I mean, what does that mean? For the sake of Yerushalayim, I'm going to keep Malchus Beis David in place in Yerushalayim. What's that? Oh, that's right. This is all coming to the same point. So first of all, we have to appreciate, this is the point that we made earlier when we already talked about David establishing the city of Yerushalayim. We have to appreciate quite what Yerushalayim was. We can't appreciate it. But it's like David HaMelech said, Gadol Hashem u'hu al ma'ay, that was the Yerushalayim today. Gadol Hashem u'hu al ma'ay, le'ir elekeinu ha'al kodshu. Yerushalayim was the capital of the Jewish state, right? But that's not what characterized it. It was the capital of Israel. That's not what characterized it. That the fact that it was the capital of Malchus Beis David was the secondary feature of Yerushalayim. What was Yerushalayim? What hit you about Yerushalayim? It was Ir Elokeinu. Gadol Hashem u'hu al-ma'ay. Hashem is especially great and exalted in the city of our God. David turned Yerushalayim into the heartbeat of Avodah, into the heart of Avodah Hashem. We already saw the Malbim talking about that earlier. We don't appreciate, we're looking today at a residual Yerushalayim. It's like we say in the Slichas, Ilei Kimushpeles HaShoel Tastiyah. Today, with everything Yerushalayim is today, it's Ilei Kimushpeles HaShoel Tastiyah, the city again, the same term, the city of God is pushed down to the lowest depths. Yerushalayim in its full glory was a city where that was fire with Avodas Hashem, with praise of Hashem. The glory of Hashem shone in Yerushalayim in an immense way. This was one of David's greatest achievements of his life was creating Yerushalayim. He breathed his spirit into Yerushalayim, and therefore Yerushalayim was a fiery center of glory of Hashem. And it was David. That's what Yerushalayim was. It was a spirit that David breathed into it. This was one of David's lifetime's accomplishments. Kibiyachol, providing Hashem and providing the Jewish people with Yerushalayim. We have a Beis HaMikdash. But David so much upped the stakes of the Beis HaMikdash by providing that very, very great setting of the Beis HaMikdash called Yerushalayim. This became an eternal national asset, spiritual asset, Yerushalayim. It's almost like a certain, when we lived in Chutz La'aretz, Yerushalayim had a certain magical sound to it. At least, that's how I remember it. Like Yerushalayim. No, it was very, very biblical. You know, you have to work hard once you're living in Eretz Yisrael to preserve those sentiments. It's not so easy. Once you go there, it's got pavement and cars and holy bagels and unholy places too, right? So, right? But Yerushalayim, that magical sound, that's what David created. Now, this is an asset of the Jewish people that Hashem very much values. And therefore, Yerushalayim is now more than just a place. It's a value. It's another value in Judaism. Right? It's another value in Judaism. Yerushalayim. And therefore Hashem says, I want to preserve this entity called Yerushalayim. It's something very, very great in terms of my glory. It's a very great asset of the Jewish people. And therefore I'm going to leave Malchus Beis David instated there for the sake of Yerushalayim. Now here we can ask, Hashem is going to be replaced, if Hashem is considering replacing the kingship, so it could have been a different king in Yerushalayim. What happened in Malchus Beis David? Right? But Hashem would have taken Yerubbaal. Yerubbaal at the time was considered the most worthy man. Let's say he would have taken an absolutely worthy person, put it instead of Yerushalayim. That would have done the job for the sake of Yerushalayim. So the simple answer, which the Mefarshim say, Adarach HaPshat is, no, at the end of the day, the seed of David, since this was an achievement of David, the family of David would have been that much more dedicated to preserving, maintaining Yerushalayim, keeping it alive, level of life. Rav Moshe David Zalig goes a step further and he says you have to understand that it's more than that. This is the point that he made before. You have to understand that David HaMelech and Yerushalayim are inherently and eternally intertwined. Yerushalayim, the neshama of Yerushalayim is the neshama of David HaMelech. And therefore, Malchus Beis David are the only ones that will really be able to make the most out of what Yerushalayim is meant to be. Because let's say you have a different, very well-meaning king who will come in and do his best. It still isn't a natural connection there. It isn't a natural fusion there. It's taking two things that aren't really compatible and managing to stick them together. Malchus Beis David is the natural battery of Yerushalayim in the spiritual sense. What's that? That's right. That's right. The Maccabim was an unnatural fixture. That's right. Very good example. Malchus Beis David was the natural battery, the optimal battery of Yerushalayim. They were Bas Zugoy, the Mishnah of Bali said. They were the spiritual Shidduch of Yerushalayim. And therefore, it had to be the spirit of Malchus Beis David had to be the heartbeat of Yerushalayim in order for Yerushalayim to be able to be everything it could be. Which brings us to the point, which is also something important to realize, that Malchus Beis David as well, this is the greatness of David HaMelech, that he turned his house He turned himself not just into a great person who eventually impacted Jewish history, but he turned himself into an eternal entity in Yiddishkeit. There's a value, a concept in Yiddishkeit. Oh, no, no, no. That's right. And therefore, like Rabbi Didier said, when we dive into the restoration of Yerushalayim, Birkas HaMazon, it goes together, right? Yerushalayim, Yerechalal. I said it 2 times today. What? goes together with Tzemach David. David. Oh, that's right. Shmona Esrei, Birkas HaMazon. David and Yerushalayim are one and the same. Okay. So therefore, Hashem is saying yes. As much as I'm going to punish you by tearing the kingship away from you, that does not mean it's not going to be such a drastic step as pulling the battery out of Yerushalayim. That not. Yerushalayim will remain Yerushalayim. Okay. Now, Vayokom Hashem, so here's where things start happening.
Why didn't this issue on Judah?
Presumably he did. We must presume that he did. But nevertheless, the consequences were the consequences. Vayokem Hashem Satan l'Shloimeh. And Hashem produced a nemesis for Shloimeh. And in fact, the Malbim actually makes your point. We'll see in a minute. Hashem produced a nemesis for Shloimeh. Es hadado adoimi izera amelech kuba edo. Hadad of Edom. Up till now, Shloimeh was, right, his whole reign, almost until the end, was characterized by tranquility, security. Now, for the first time, there's an opponent to Shloimeh HaMelech appearing on the scene. Who? Hadad of Edom. Now, let's note something. Hashem already told him what the punishment is going to be. Hashem told him what the punishment is going to be. The kingship is going to be torn away. It's all going to be something from within. Where does all of a sudden a foreign opponent come in? Is there another punishment? So the Malbim actually makes a double point. The Malbim says, tearing the kingship away was the consequence of what happened. It had gone to the point where it was already a point of no return. This had to happen. Tshuva wouldn't help for that. But here is already the personal angle. The personal angle is, now I'm going to provide you with an inspiration for tshuva. Something already personal. This is between me and you. This is already not the national level. I'm going to provide you with your own private tutor to inspire you on the personal level to do tshuva. That's where Adad has an idea. All of a sudden, Shlomo, for the first time in his life, has an opponent. Not going to make major problems for him, but he's on the scene to make Shlomo's life a little less comfortable than it had been until now. And this was meant just as a personal favor for Shlomo to inspire him to choose. Okay. And who is this opponent? Hadad Adami. He was from the offspring of the king of Edom. And he had a personal vendetta against Shlomo. Well, not against Shlomo per se, against David. What's that? When David was waging his campaign against Edom, Yoav and David fought Edom. They defeated him. And that was the whole famous story. Afterwards, they made a point of burying with great dignity all of the dead of the enemy. But what happened at that time was that they smote all the males of Edom.
These are being buried now?
Oh, so it's a little confusing in the pasuk. The Malbim works it out. It's a little confusing in the pasuk. The pasuk says, when David was going out against Edom, when Yoav came to bury all the corpses, then he smote all the males of Edom. It's a little confusing, right? Because Yoav and all the Jewish army sat there for 6 months, and the priest called off of Edom. So they wiped out every last male in Edom. So what's going on? They're burying while they're killing. First they killed, then they buried. First they buried, then they killed. The Malbim said that there were two stages here. They made war against Edom, and they defeated Edom. and they came to impose their sovereignty. And at that time, they also went about burying all the dead. While this was going on, Edom tried to make another stand against the Jewish people. They started fighting them again. At that point, even though at this point, when once Edom was subdued, they were ready to leave it at that and impose their sovereignty, once Edom came back again for another round, they stayed there for another 6 months to completely wipe them. When this happened, Vayivrach Adad, so this Adad ran away, he and some other Adoni, Me'abde Ovid, from the servants of his father, Mitzoy, came with him. So by Mitzoy, they fled to Mitzvah. Adad at that point was a youth. He survived the massacre of Edom. He understands that he didn't harbor very positive feelings toward David, toward the Jewish people. Okay. So they fled, heading for Mitzrayim. That's where he wanted to flee to. And en route, they stopped in Midian by Avaru Paran, and then they came to Paran. This is, you know what that is? That's the Midbar, right? That's where you have a lot of Ishmaelim. By Kuan Hashem Imam Paran, and then. Ultimately, they started out as a small band of fugitives. Other people joined them along the way. Finally, they arrived in Mitzrayim. They came to Paran. And he came at the head of a whole big group of people, a whole big entourage. It's coming as aristocracy, right, as royal blood. Pari granted him a home. Velechem omaloi, and he also designated that he be fed. He gave him land. Meaning, Pari very much took to this Hadad, and Pari set him up very, very nicely. Not only that, Hadad found favor in the eyes of Pari. Vayiten loy isha, and he granted him as a wife. As Achoyz Ishta, his sister-in-law, Pari, so much liked Hadad that not only did he give him an estate, he gave him power, provided him all of his expense covered by the palace, he actually gave him his own sister-in-law, his queen's sister, as a wife. He turned him into his brother-in-law. Achoyz Tachpenes Hamgzira. He gave him as a wife the sister of Queen Tachpenes. And if you want to know quite how close he was with Paroi, his sister of Tachpenes, she doesn't even get her name mentioned. She bore for him his son Gnuvas, and he was actually raised by Tachpenes, by the queen, in Paroi's home, along with the family of the king. The son of Hadad, Mamish grew up as one of the children of Paroi.
They don't mention his wife's name.
Right. We don't get any inkling of who. Right. So what the Mepharshim say is, it doesn't necessarily mean that his own mother disappeared off the scene. The point that we're making is that this family was so drawn close by the king that they actually just merged and became part and parcel with the king's family. And this is important for what's coming. Okay. So, in other words, here we have this fugitive kid runs away, coming with a band of fugitives. Pari receives him with the greatest honors and suddenly turns him into like the closest person to the king, one of the highest standing people in the whole land of the tribe. And this is important for two reasons. First of all, we cannot help but note, we need the Kenegat Midah. Maybe Hashem is making a point. First of all, right? It started out with Shlomo taking the daughter of Pharaoh. So Hashem is bringing a retribution from the same direction, right? Here's the thing. What's that? Say here. I don't know if this is a. I don't know if it's already the next Pharaoh. I don't know. But whatever the case is.
It's going to be the same Pharaoh.
Is it the same Pharaoh? Oh yeah? Okay. Okay, Mamish is talking about the same Pharaoh, which Mamish makes it interesting. It comes out that this Hadad is Shlomo's uncle involved. Okay? So. And also, Rav Moshe David Vali says, well, all the different nuances here. All the different nuances. He's coming from Edom. He's the family of Esau, right? Esau was the one who was told, as soon as Pali saw begin misbehaving, I'll set you on them. And that's what's going on here. But not just Esau. Not just Esau. It's Esau coming as a mechutn with Paroi to bring out the Midah Keneged Midah of Shlomo, who made himself a mechutn of Paroi. Okay? So now, Vahadad Shoma b'Mitzrayim Kishochav David Amavos. Now, Hadad heard in Mitzrayim. Now, you have to note that this itself is unnatural. The king should take such a liking, such an intense liking to a fugitive, right? And give him this standing. It's already something unnatural. Hashem wanted this whole story to come through bizarre means. Because, on the contrary, it should be clear that this opposition to Shlomo was coming from a divine place. Note that Shlomo was in a place where the greatest kings in the world bowed their head before him. Who's going to end up his opponent? Not some other great king, not a hero, right? Who is it? A ragtag fugitive who is raised out of the dust by Paroi. He's the one, the first person in Shlomo's day from all the great kings around who's going to raise a threatening hand towards Shlomo.
He says if he makes Yoash, that Saba, he didn't hear that Shlomo killed him. Which, like, he actually deserved to die. You know, like, there was Shlomo sitting in his house scratching his head about this fugitive, and I even did him a favor. I killed
the cleared guy. The way out there.
I did kill the guy who killed his family, and he still has a problem from him.
Well, I don't know if that gratitude he wouldn't feel to Shlomo. At the end of the day, Shlomo is David's son. Right? He killed Yayo, but he's still David's son. But, yes, in terms of just the point that you're making, that it's ironic how Shlomo was the one who enabled him to get the guts to be able to do this, as we'll see in a minute. That Shoma b'Mitzrayim ki shochav David emavoyz. What's the same power? Oh, okay. Hadad heard in Mitzrayim that David died. So now the great, famous, legendary, mighty warriors were dead. Now Hadad feels like encouraged to make his step. So Hadad says to Paroi, "Shall cheni ve'ele chalas." Here, let me go now.
40 years ago.
He said, "Yeah, close to 40 years ago." He's already an older man, right? He came as a young kid. Now he's already an older man.
No, when did he hear
the
Yoach
died?
When he was 12.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know how that adds up. My Paroi said to him, "Kimata chaserim." Why? What are you looking for? What do you lack here? In chomim bakesh aleches and elzechom. You want to go to your land. Why would you want to leave here? You're at the top of the world. Vayomer, he said, "Loi, no, ki shalach tishalchim. I want you to send me off." In other words, this is a big what out here. It didn't make sense. Paroi is asking a good kasha. At the top of the world, you have no need for anything more. But this is, the mafarshim say, this is all the point. Hashem put this drive into his heart to make Torahs for Shlomo. Actually, not even to be able to wage battle against Shlomo. Even that is out of question. But to go and somehow make problems. What he'll do exactly, I have to see, but somehow go and make problems. The whole thing is coming from an unnatural place. But that's exactly the point. This was meant to have that very clearly divine nature. Okay, stop.
Why doesn't Hashem operate in a way like today? You know,